listening to the Apollo Podcast Network. One.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Launchpad Podcast, presented by Apollo Media, all Houston, all original. I'm one of your hosts, Britt, co-host of Step Back Sisterhood, as well as contributor at Apollo Media. And you can find me on Twitter at Britt Robatista.
And I'm your second host. My name is Taylor Pate. I have covered the Rockets for Red Nation Hoops, House of Houston back in the day, and now Apollo Media. You can find me on Twitter at Taylor L. Pate, and be sure to follow the official Apollo Media account at Apollo HOU, as well as hitting the subscribe button on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcast. We would greatly appreciate that.
Well, Taylor, first off, this is the first time we're talking on a podcast, so it's good to, I guess, virtually meet you since everything's supposedly closed. But according to the Texas Rangers, it's not as much that. But anyway, moving on. This is a basketball podcast anyway. So today on the show, we're going to talk about the Rockets, and unfortunately, they are continuing the losing ways. Or maybe fortunately for folks who are, in the tanking crowd, they achieved their losing record of the season with last night's loss versus the Phoenix Suns. We're going to talk about that, as well as in the a few discussion points with Christian Wood and the rest of the young guys on the team. In the third segment, that was the second segment, by the way, the third segment, we're going to talk about John Wall, as well as I guess a few minutes to discuss Daryl Morey, former GM of the Houston Rockets, and his very intriguing comments that he had spoken about today. Does that sound good?
That sounds fantastic to me.
Great. So, like I mentioned at the top, the Rockets achieved their losing record with the loss versus the Suns. They actually had back-to-back games on Sunday the 4th and Monday the 5th, losing 115 to 122 versus the Pelicans, and then a very close and actually a very entertaining game, considering a lot of the games that have happened this season, against the Suns, losing 130 to 133. Was there anything in particular that stood out to you?
Honestly, the team didn't look terrible. They actually seemed like they had they were firing on all cylinders for the most part, and they hung 130 on a top five defense in the league. It was actually pretty encouraging.
Yeah, for sure. And I think the part, I guess, to be honest, a lot of it blends with me, but the one part that was really exciting was that a lot of the young players and, folks that had been struggling to some extent showed that they can, go head to head against one of the, like you said, the top defenses in the league and one of the top teams in the NBA, the Suns. There was one part of the game where I think it was relatively early when Chris Paul was like sort of mocking the team. And I thought that it was really exciting for them to like fight back. And multiple times they had, a chance to even win the game. I think the part that sort of lost it for them was when Avery Bradley, fouled the 3-point shooter and cost a 4-point play, which was not fun to do. But other than that, I think it at least the positive is that the last several games, really starting, let me look at the schedule for the last few weeks. So really starting, I would say since the Timberwolves our home series that the Rockets had in Minnesota, they have had relatively close wins or losses, sorry, outside of one game. But they have shown that they can at least have a fighting chance, and that's something that's worth being positive about, regardless of the losses.
Yeah, and I think what you're kind of starting to see is these guys are getting a lot more consistent minutes with, you know, whether it be injuries to John Wall or whether it be, you know, guys sitting out because they want to be traded. Prior to that, kind of, I mean, to have the same starting lineup three games in a row was a feat. And then, of course, Daniel House, you know, sprains his ankle, I think. And then so that streak goes to an end immediately. And we're throwing, you know, yet another starting lineup out. But I think what's just kind of starting to happen is these guys are getting NBA minutes. They're playing against, you know, starters a lot of the time. And you know, a guy like Kevin Porter Jr. needs as many minutes as he can get, especially with him changing roles and kind of just taking over this team as his. You know, I think you're just seeing these guys get more comfortable with those roles.
Yeah, and I think Coach Silas had a very intriguing and good point that, you know, or that KPJ is getting a lot of experience by watching, you know, someone, older vet like DJ Augustine. Augustine has been a very impactful player, and, you know, Kevin Porter Jr. has definitely, I think, improved to a certain extent on his point guard game, especially since he's transitioning to that role. I'm excited to see how he, you know, how he goes. And I think the other positive too is that it seems as though, you know, the players, regardless of the, you know, now multiple losses, they are still energized and still listening to Coach Silas. I mean, at this point, you know, since I think it's all but certain that the Rockets are going to miss the playoffs or miss the postseason, whatever, play-in games, that they're not going to have, you know, the ability to go further than, you know, whenever the season ends in about 6 weeks. So it's good to see that they're still engaging with the Coach Silas and the rest of the coaching staff.
Yeah, I think it's a far cry from what you saw during the 20 game losing streak. Like at the you know, after maybe the 10th, 11th, 12th loss, you just started seeing these guys look defeated. I mean, they looked like they didn't even want to play in the NBA anymore. And so what you're seeing now is just a totally different team, you know. And I think kind of getting that baggage, you know, it was always almost certain that Victor Oladipo wasn't going to be here past the trade deadline. PJ Tucker did, you know, his thing and, you know, got to where he wanted to go. But you could tell that there was a lot of guys who were saying, man, I don't want to play for the Rockets anymore. You know, I'm ready to get on to my next team because I know that that's what the ultimate outcome for me is this season. And you can tell because the guys that are in there now look like they are hungry. They look like they want to win. They look like they want to compete and make a name for themselves in the NBA. It's been pretty incredible to see. In particular, it's been really interesting to see the dynamic with Christian Wood and Kelly Olynyk, kind of both on the court at the same time. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, no, it's been really good. I mean, they've actually are doing, you know, a bit of a, you know, pick and roll game, which is nice to see. And I think Olynyk, you know, mostly because of his, it's strange to call Olynyk a veteran at this point, but he is a veteran compared to a lot of the guys on the team. But I feel like Olynyk has a lot of the move set and skills that Wood has potential of doing as well. He just needs to, you know, learn more and be more, you know, I guess what aggressive about it. That's a, you know, one of the things that a lot of the team has said over the last few, you know, games during the wins and during the single win and as well as the five losses, that they need to be more aggressive out there. And I feel like Olynyk has definitely, you know, provided that for Wood. And, you know, you're mentioning Wood. I feel as though Wood, or at least, I don't know if it's actually happening, but before we were recording, you were mentioning that Wood doesn't feel like he's as efficient as he has been. Do you think that has been improving, or do you think, you know, it can improve before the end of the season?
Yeah, I think I think that that ankle injury was honestly really bad, and he might have been better off shutting down for the rest of the season. That being said, as a guy who's had several ankle sprains just like that one, what happens is you play on it for a little while and it's going to hurt and it's going to be sore each time after you play, and eventually that stops, and you can play through that, and then, like, it does go away. The problem is whenever you're playing on it, it hurts. I mean, it hurts really bad, especially if you I know he's wearing high tops now. I do the same thing for that exact reason. It's really difficult to kind of get in your natural rhythm and feel the same way as you would normally whenever you're kind of favoring one side or something like that. That being said, he's got plenty of time. If he needs to take a break, take a game or two here or there. Obviously this is a lost season, but I think he's got plenty of room to continue to improve. And his numbers aren't that bad. I mean, they're really not bad at all, actually. He looks like he's having to try a little harder to get everything taken care of.
Yeah. And I think, you're exactly right. I mean, I was never like too athletic, but I have been quite a bit clumsy and have sprained both of my, both of my ankles too many times to even count at this point. So you definitely just have to either live with it or spend the time sitting. And I guess it's probably motivating to a certain extent that he is out there, since he is wanting to become, the leader of the franchise. He probably has said, like, considering that the medical staff probably said it won't get worse, it's just a pain management issue, that he is willing to go out there even during a lost season. But I just hope that he doesn't, overdo it. Like you said, it's just going to be a matter of time if things get better. But if it doesn't get better, it's probably worth for him to sit or, take some games off. At this point, it's not going to really matter either way. I guess it all goes towards that tanking conversation. But before we end this segment, I wanted to quickly talk about KJ Martin, one of the other young guys who are doing really well. LaShard Brinkley was mentioning on Twitter that KJ Martin in the last 5 games has over 125 offensive rating and a 75% effective field goal percentage, and has a 73.2% true shooting percentage. It seems as though he is on the path of actually, getting more minutes. Do you feel like, from your perspective, that he deserves more time on the court?
I am unreasonably excited about KJ Martin, because there are a ton of guys who come into the league who are out of this world athletic, can jump with the best of them, and they never put everything together, whether it's the shot, the basketball IQ, whatever it is that winds up being the issue. It's hard for guys to put that all together. And KJ Martin is making the right rotations. His three-point shot does not look nearly as much of a downfall as we thought maybe coming into the season. And he looks like a guy who can play 25, 30 minutes a game and play some of the, the better defense on the team. I tweeted this out a few minutes ago, right before we started. In the last 10 games, the two-man lineup of Jayshon Tate and KJ Martin has a 121.6 offensive rating, a 103.9 defensive rating, and a 17.7 net. So, in a stretch of games where the Rockets have kind of started improving certain areas of their game, that's where you start to look at. You start to look at these young guys, and I think KJ Martin has elite defensive capabilities or potential. And I think his offense is not nearly the liability that we thought it was. So I am unreasonably excited about KJ Martin.
No, I definitely agree with you. I don't really have any more, you know, anything else to say other than, you know, I just really enjoy watching him get a swat or two during the games. It seems like it's becoming slightly fewer and farther in between. But if he can develop his defensive game, you know, outside of the blocks, and as well as develop the offensive game that he has done so far, he's going to go far. And I'm really excited to see how it goes, especially since we got him with the last pick in the draft, which was, you know, maybe at this point a potential steal.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he's probably performed as a top like 10 to 15 rookie this season in limited minutes.
Yep, for sure. So I just realized that I completely ran over my notes and we combined segment one and two. So when we return, we'll figure out what else to talk about next.
Nice.
Looking for a better way to rep H-Town? Be sure to check out ApolloHOU.com for Astros and Rockets apparel you can't find anywhere else. Use promo code LAUNCH for 10% off at checkout. Apollo HOU, all Houston, all original.
And continuing on here at the Launchpad Podcast, presented by Apollo Media. If you enjoy the show, do us a favor and drop a review or leave us some stars. In our next segment, we're going to kind of continue talking about Kelly Olynyk, Avery Bradley, their contributions to the team since the Victor Oladipo trade. And we've also got some Ben McLemore news to talk about.
Yeah,
so, sorry about that.
Go ahead.
So how have you felt about the combination of Avery Bradley and Kelly Olynyk, both, I guess, as a whole in return for Victor Oladipo and individually?
So let me go with the positive person first, which is Olynyk. I feel like Olynyk has definitely shown that, you know, his shooting is still streaky. I don't think that's probably going to change, but his leadership and his end game role, I mean, he's essentially going playing, you know, being the go-to guy in the last few minutes, which may or may not be the best thing moving forward, but at least for this iteration of the Rockets, who's trying to rebuild and have the young players grow, it's nice to see that he is willing to step up and contribute in ways that are positive towards the team.
I would argue that for a team trying to get into the top four of the lottery, Kelly Olynyk being the go-to guy is a great thing.
For sure. I guess that's a positive. But I think, you know, just his leadership so far has been a great contributor to the team. Even though they are losing, I feel as though he has definitely shown that he's willing to be that veteran presence and step back when he needs to, and then step up and do the things that need to be done when it's needed. It's definitely helping when it comes to the top four in the lottery. But I think that in the long term, it will help develop these young players. I mean, we previously mentioned the last segment about Christian Wood and how he's impacting him, but I'm just excited that he is doing a lot more than what people thought he would do at the, you know, when Oladipo was traded. I mean, I don't think that the Oladipo trade, I don't think we'll be able to fully, you know, give a grade or a score for it until the end of the season, but at least it seems as though Olynyk is factoring in pretty well, which is more than what we can, you know, we probably thought at the beginning of the season. As for Avery Bradley, I mean, he's only really played this is his second game, because he didn't play the first game.
Mm-hmm.
And he hasn't been necessarily the greatest impact. I'm looking at the advanced box score, and his defensive rating is 131. That's not necessarily the best thing to see. But he was a plus one in the game versus the Suns. I would say that I will give it more time. Ultimately, you know, Bradley and Olynyk are still trying to get into you know, this new system, meeting, you know, new players and, you know, just getting traded from a potential, you know, playoff team to a not playoff team is really, you know, rough for anyone, especially in the middle of the season when you didn't know, you know, earlier that you weren't going to. So I'm just going to give, you know, I'm excited about Olenek, and I'm going to give Avery a little bit more of the benefit of the doubt. Let's see how he develops, a little bit down the road.
I think Avery Bradley is a guy that you can plug into a contender, and he can give you some really valuable minutes defensively, and he can knock down a three here and there. But when you take him from that role and then plug him into a team that's rebuilding, you really should temper your expectations, because he's more of a niche player where he's kind of got this role that he's going to fill for some team off the bench, you know, 15 to 20 minutes. And that's kind of where he's at in his career. And so I'm not really expecting too much from him. I don't honestly think he'll be here, past the end of his contract. With Kelly Olynyk, I think there's potential there. Olynyk is 29. He's not exactly young. He's not going to be any kind of cornerstone for this franchise by any means. But what I think he could do is he could kind of give Christian Wood a little bit of mentorship, being that, like you said, so much of their skill set overlaps. Christian Wood could definitely learn from Kelly Olynyk, and then probably do what he's doing even better. We've seen how efficient Christian Wood can be. We've seen, you know, just how talented he is. So I think getting that experience in and of itself will be really valuable. And then I think that there's also potential, depending on how much money Kelly Olynyk wants, there's potential for him to come back and really actually be a part of not just the rebuild, but the actual contention as well. It's just one of those things where you've got two guys who came from a team trying to win a championship to a rebuilding team. And one of those guys seems to be enjoying himself and the other one is, you know, just getting acclimated.
Yeah, for sure. And I think the one last thing before we go to another part of the big rotation is that when it comes to, you know, Olynyk, I agree. And I think this is the one thing that a lot of teams that are in rebuilding mode struggle with, is to find veterans who are, one, capable of having a leadership role, and two, want to be part of a leadership role in a team. And if Olynyk is willing to do that and the price range is right, it's definitely worth continuing to have him there, because I mean, we've seen other franchises essentially, not even, just take every single veteran player out and just have these young guys learn bad habits and bad, things during the time that the team's losing. And that causes a huge, essentially a churn in that team. If you can, get good practice or, get veteran players who understand playoff experience, which, Bradley, although he was out last year during the bubble, but Olynyk was definitely a part of the Heat rotation to a certain extent, they can, add a perspective that will allow these young players to develop further, after they're gone. So I'm happy to see them still here, and hopefully, things can work out. And, although it probably won't work out in the win and loss, level, but at least it will hopefully work out from the young guys. But I think the other person I wanted to talk about real fast, well, two actually, is first DJ Wilson. you were mentioning while we were taking a quick break that Wilson has had a minutes reduction. What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, so when DJ Wilson was first traded over, I didn't think that he was necessarily this really high-end prospect or anything like that. But I thought that he had potential or has potential. You know, he was kind of misused in Milwaukee, and he got really sparing minutes and really inconsistent minutes as well. It would go from, you know, 20 minutes one night to five or did not play the next night. But he certainly showed flashes, and I think he did the same thing with the Rockets. You know, there was points where his 3-point shot looked really good. He was playing really sound defense. He's kind of herky jerky, kind of, you know, a little unorthodox in his movement, but overall he was playing pretty well. And don't get me wrong, obviously Kelly Olynyk coming over, that like it's kind of a no-brainer that he's going to get some minutes, but we've seen over the last few games, DJ Wilson, I think he's averaging 12 minutes a game, and I think he had 2 points and 4 rebounds against the Suns, and he had 7 points and 2 rebounds in only 9 minutes against the Pelicans. I don't know. I feel like the guy's got something, at least decent rotation minutes, and I would like to see him get probably closer to like the maybe 15, 17, you know, somewhere around there minutes per game, at least to get a chance to show, you know, himself, improve himself. He's only 25. He's kind of, you know, fitting along that same timeline as Jayshon Tate and Christian Wood. I don't know. I feel like he kind of got snubbed a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. And I think the other thing too is that I don't know if the last couple of matchups versus the Pelicans and the Suns were necessarily the best matchups for him. Also the Nets too. I feel as though, like you mentioned, he has some room to grow when it comes to his play style, and I can definitely see him playing more of a four moving forward. But that sometimes causes him to be, you know, sort of misplaced when the Rockets are playing more of the Olynyk and Wood combo. But I feel as though the, you know, Silas hasn't given up on him yet. Like, you know, he did have one DMP over the last, you know, several games, but for the most part, it seems as though, you know, I guess we really have to see how it goes, and hopefully he does get time to, or get, you know, a little bit more minutes to develop and show his talent. And the last player I think would be worth mentioning real fast is Jayshon Tate. I mean, I feel like I talk about him every segment, but maybe, or every time I'm on the show, but maybe you have a few words about him before we wrap up the segment.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Jayshon is a potential top five or so defender in the league in the next few years. He is on a very team friendly contract, and his scoring and playmaking over the last handful of games has been really coming along. His 3-point shot has improved. His comfortability level, I mean, the guy looks like he's been playing in the NBA for 5 years. I think he is without a doubt one of the pillars of this team for the foreseeable future. That guy is just, he's got basketball IQ. He's got, I mean, out of this world defense. His offensive game is coming along, and honestly, his playmaking is already pretty good. It's the only question that we have is can he score on his own, which over the last handful of games he has been doing. He looks to be probably like maybe a top 3 or 4 rookie this season.
For sure. And I mean, I think he definitely should be considered in the first team all rookie. He just has, I feel as though, like, you know, I saw some, you know, sort of analysis from folks before the season and, you know, mentioning that his defense wasn't as good as what people thought, you know, when he was in the NBL, but he has shown growth in a way that I don't think a lot of us even suspected when he was, you know, signed at the beginning of the season. So I'm thrilled that he is doing what he's doing. I mean, it's like every night there's some, like, either a hustle play or a shot that allows the Rockets to be, you know, at least competitive in the games, that just makes me smile. So I just hope that he continues to do that. And I mean, maybe, I mean, I hate to compare him to Draymond Green. It makes me want to gag, but I feel like he has that potential to be like that unknown, you know, sort of player that comes through and just allows for the Rockets to become successful faster than what we assumed after the start of this rebuild. So I hope that, you know, especially since we have the Rockets have a team friendly deal with him, that he'll continue to just like soar and be a great part of the team.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I think that's going to do it for this segment. And the next segment, we're going to talk about a little bit about John Wall, and then we've got some thoughts on something that Daryl Morey brought up today.
Looking for a better way to rep H-Town? Be sure to check out ApolloHOU.com for Astros and Rockets apparel you can't find anywhere else. Use promo code LAUNCH for 10% off at checkout. Apollo HOU, all Houston, all original.
And we're back for the third and final segment of today's Launchpad podcast. Please give us any likes or subscribe in your favorite podcast provider, you know, whichever one you're using. So in this segment, we want to talk about two things. One, about a current Rockets player that, you know, may be on the road to shutting down for the season, and a former GM of the Rockets. Which one do you want to talk about first?
Let's start with John Wall.
Sounds good. So John Wall has, I don't know if it's necessarily mysteriously, but he has definitely been out of the rotation the last several games, and out of the, you know, he's been a DNP for the last several games because of, you know, various injuries, more particularly his knee, which has been reported by multiple folks as needing a knee scope, which would effectively end his season for the Rockets. Do you think that this extended hiatus that Wall has had so far is leading for them, for the Rockets medical staff, to try to shut him down, or do you think it's just a short-term, you know, hiatus for him?
I have a really tough time trying to kind of navigate this, because if I remember correctly, the first game that he missed in this stretch was supposedly for rest, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. And then that rest kind of just got extended, which is a little, you know, strange to me. But that being said, I'm not going to try to, you know, claim that the Rockets are intentionally tanking. Neither will they, but it would be a very beneficial move for their draft situation for John Wall to not play anymore this season. So I think that maybe they realize that, and John realizes that. If he's going to need the scope anyway, why not go ahead and get it out of the way? Maybe that's the thinking there. But it's just strange to me that it started out as rest, and now it's, you know, stretched into a 3 or 4 game absence.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, to be honest, I've been one of the last people to say that the Rockets should go ahead and tank, but realistically, and with them, you know, officially in the losing record for the season, it's worth doing that. And unfortunately, you know, for John Wall, I think he was genuine in that he wanted to have the team be successful, but the Rockets have just had extremely, extremely bad luck this season.
I don't think it could have gone any worse for this team after, you know, the whole Harden debacle. I don't think any of them intended for the losing streak to happen or anything like that. I completely agree with you there.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess it's really unfortunate for Wall, considering he has been out of the league because of injury for the last, you know, two seasons, just around two seasons before. So to not even be able to finish a season, I think that can be draining. I mean, like I mentioned before, I'm not an athlete per se, but I think when you are trying to do the best that you can in a career, you don't want to miss extended time because of illness or because of injury. So it must be, you know, demoralizing to a certain extent for Wall to have to make that decision and probably relatively soon. But I guess I just hope that, you know, it seems as though the Rockets are taking things, you know, one day at a time when it comes to Wall. And the other thing too is that the Rockets are definitely, you know, for better or for worse, are trying to go ahead and move forward with this philosophy that they're going to do the best for the player. Unlike, you know, according to a lot of reports, what they did previously when it came to, you know, a certain GM that we'll talk about in a moment. But I guess I feel bad for John Wall, but I feel bad about the entire Rockets roster at this point.
Yeah, no, I actually completely agree with you there. I, you know, early in the season, I felt like I would run through a brick wall for John Wall. And as things kind of went on, I just kind of started feeling worse and worse for him. Because it was really obvious to me that he, and probably everybody else as well, that he was incredibly frustrated with the James Harden situation. He after the trade, tried to rally the guys and be that leader that, you know, that strapped the guys on his back and carried them forward. But just with everything that happened to the Rockets, there was just no chance for him, unfortunately. And I think early in the season, there may have been not mismanagement with his minutes, but I think he probably pushed a little harder than normal to try and come back and be successful. And he ended up playing a lot of long minutes. And maybe that, you know, that maybe that led him on this path to needing a knee scope and, you know, having another injury. But yeah, I'm with you. I feel bad for the guy. You know, it's very clear that he's been busting his butt to try and come back into the league and show that he's still, you know, got that number one overall pick potential. And there's been flashes where he played like it. And it really sucks to see him kind of go out this way for this season.
Yeah, for sure. And I think one of the things that definitely hurt was that, you know, I think he was trying to make a point to James Harden, which is why he was, you know, taking up those minutes. Of course, I'm just theorizing. I don't know John Wall or can read minds, but it feels as though that was part of it. And, you know, since all of the, you know, sort of drama happened, it's just been sort of a roller coaster, not for just him, but for everyone. But one person who wasn't involved with the roller coaster release, maybe set it off in a certain extent, is Daryl Morey. And Daryl Morey has recently provided an interesting quote, considering his time at the, you know, in the Rockets organization. And this actually happened on, I was doing some quick research about this. This actually, he was actually on the show on March 30th, the Dan Le Batard show, discussing this, but it was aggregated today and now everyone is talking about it. But he said something interesting about the three-point line. I'm going to read this as quickly as I can. But he said, I'm quoting now, "A lot of people don't like how the game looks right now. I actually have empathy for that. Basically, when they put the three-point line in, they made it worth three. The bottom line is is that it is worth too much. It skews the game. It makes it so that there's only one, really only one path to be a good team. You have to utilize, or you have to be utilizing that at a high level. He later said, it's a real challenge for the league, and I think it's something that will be addressed over the next 3 years or so. He essentially said that instead of a three-point line, the three-point line should be worth 2.5 points. So what is your sort of thoughts as Daryl Morey, you know, has changed course potentially? I don't know how to phrase it when it comes to the three-point opportunities that are now rampant in the league.
So I think that I understand the sentiment that a three is worth 50% more than a two. And so, you know, it's the math just adds up to where teams should be taking more 3-point shots. And it makes sense. It's extreme value. And one solution I've seen, proposed is go to a four-point line and twos would be worth threes. So then your advantage is 1.33 times as much versus 1.5 times as much. And okay, sure. But then every single record book that you have is going to be skewed. And you know, people are going to revolt at the idea. To me, there's not a clear solution right now. I don't think that they're going to make it 2.5 points. I don't think that they have any, any incentive to doing that. I mean, fans love watching 3-point shots. Fans love seeing Steph Curry pull up from, you know, from the logo. It's just one of those things that I feel like NBA purists are going to, you know, lash and fight back on. It's really funny to me that he is the guy kind of spearheading this conversation, given the fact that, you know, his Rockets teams took the most threes in NBA history. I don't know. I guess it makes sense. Daryl's a smart guy. He wanted to take an advantage wherever he could. And, you know, a 50% point advantage makes sense for him. But I don't think that the league has – I don't think they have any incentive to make that kind of change right now.
Yeah. I mean, there's a few things to back up what you were mentioning is that one – you know, there have been, I guess, studies and polls done, and a lot of fans have said that they like the high scoring. I mean, I'm pretty neutral about it, but I feel as though on the defensive side, it really causes a lot of issues when it comes to, you know, the purists. And I'm not really a purist. I just want to have the best thing possible. And I feel like the offensive game has definitely gotten a large bump compared to the defensive side, and that hurts a little bit. And I think just in general, like you said, there's no incentive for the NBA to do that if fans are, you know, wanting that to occur, or at least the fans who are willing to put money on the line for it, which I think is ultimately what the NBA wants to do. The other thing too is that you're exactly right. Hearing Daryl Morey, who has previously been quite the opponent of the 3-point shot, you know, that I think a lot of folks like to give Golden State that, you know, sort of mantle of adding, you know, like sort of innovating the 3-point game, but that was really the Rockets. I mean, I remember when Mark Jackson, you know, the last season before he was fired and replaced by Steve Kerr, prevented the Rockets from getting, at the time, the 3-point single game record. Yeah, by being, you know, essentially, you know, fouling, like you said. So the Rockets were definitely the innovator, or at least the modern innovator of the 3-point shot. And in fact, you know, back in the 90s when the Rockets won back-to-back, they were one of the first teams that would, you know, consistently shoot threes. So the Rockets, you know, in the last, you know, 25 years have definitely been a part of that. But Daryl Morey has sort of, I guess, expedited that. And for him to go back on that, especially considering that one of the other quotes he mentioned in that podcast is that he appreciated that Ben Simmons has the ability to set up a three, even though he doesn't, Ben Simmons doesn't take any of those or almost never shoots them himself. So it's definitely, it feels as though maybe not so much hypocrisy. I don't want to necessarily put that on him completely, but it's definitely a political slash, you know, gamesmanship play for him to say, oh, the shot should be 2.5 points when previously he was willing and consistently wanting his coaches to get utilize the players on the court to shoot threes as much as possible.
Yeah. And I guess I think honestly, to your point about defense and how the offensive game has come further along than defense has, if they want to mitigate that, maybe they can make some defensive rule changes. You know, I don't know exactly what those would be, but I think that that's where you should try to start mitigating 3-point shots, not by changing the point total.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the examples of something that could potentially be changed is reintroducing the hand checking rule, or, you know, a modified version of the hand checking rule. Because essentially right now, folks can just, you know, literally run into other players and get fouls out of nowhere. And that definitely disincentivizes defenses from actually trying to get, you know, actually make plays on the ball, because there is a higher than likely chance that they'll be called for, you know, essentially a ticky-tack play. So I think there are definitely rules that can be implemented to supplement what is going on, as well as provide, you know, the purest, quote unquote, maybe not all of them. I think Charles Barkley and other folks will definitely still not necessarily like the product that's on the floor, but you know, the more reasonable purist, as well as the more, you know, the newer fans to appreciate the game even further, even if that does include the amount of scoring that's happening today.
Yep, I would completely agree there.
Yeah, so did you want to talk about anything else, or I think we have gotten to the point of ending the show?
No, I think we are ready to wrap up.
Well, thank you so much for joining me. I think we had an interesting conversation considering the very difficult time that the Rockets are currently in.
Yeah, absolutely. And shout out to Ben McLemore getting signed with the Lakers. Hopefully he gets a chance to compete for a title.
Although I will never root for the Lakers. So
agreed.
That's
agreed.
As far as I will say about it.
If by happenstance it you know, occurs, then okay. But
yep, another clutch sports player to the Lakers, but that's another story for another time. I think I'll just wrap it up now, and that's going to do it for today's show. So if you haven't done so already, please make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcast.
Yeah, and be sure to follow Apollo HOU for blogs, merch, and video podcasts, all kinds of original Houston sports content. You're not going to find it anywhere else.
As always, thank you so much for listening, and we look forward to having you back for our next episode of the Launchpad Podcast, covering your Houston Rockets.